Okay, so we have the opportunity now to focus a little bit more on the topic that we started yesterday, which has to do with the relationship of Baal Yirah to Baal Yimatzeh. And yesterday we focused more on the question of what kind of association are we talking about when we forbid association with chametz, that it doesn't neatly fit into other categories of either ownership or being on your property. And we saw that it seems like there is a unique kind of association that the Torah is prohibiting, and that it's consistent with the assumption that there is a gedar d'oraisa here. There's a siag min haTorah to keep us away from eating chametz, and the details are consistent with that. And that the Gemaras that we're seeing at the moment, Tayyim and Beis and Vav and Aleph around there, the various dinim that are primarily in those locations, all helped to flesh that out a little bit and support that idea. And together with that, so we raised the question, so the Maisa, Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzeh, one issue was, how do they relate to Tashbisu? But another question is, how do they relate to each other? Are they separate Isurim? Are they one Isur? And one impression that we had yesterday was that the Gemara is really telling us essentially one idea, just there are details that need to be fleshed out, so therefore the Torah needs more language than simply encapsulating it in just Baal Yirah or Baal Yimatzeh. And our Gemara tells us some of the details that get derived from the usage of both words and the Gezeirah Shavah between them, giving us the impression that really we could just call it one din. So is that indeed the case? So what did you see from what you looked at this morning? So how do the Moni HaMitzvos relate to this? Is this one mitzvah? Is it two mitzvahs? Ellie?
The Rambam brings two separate mitzvahs. One for Baal Yirah and one for Baal
Yimatzeh. Okay, so that is certainly interesting, right? That the Rambam counting this as two prohibitions, as two Isurim and a Sefer HaMitzvos, is surprising. So what makes it surprising? So, among other things, aside from what we've mentioned already, but the Rambam in the beginning of his Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam has Shrashim. And these Shrashim, these principles, these roots, is what he uses to determine how we count mitzvos. Now, parenthetically, I don't know if we had a chance to mention this year, the whole question of counting mitzvos is itself a fascinating area of Jewish study and where exactly it fits in. We have a Mesorah that we have a Tayyig Mitzvos. The Gemara says that most clearly in the very end of Maseches Makos, that there are 613 mitzvos. There's a few other allusions to it elsewhere in Shas, but primarily that's where this idea of Tayyig Mitzvos comes from. And for whatever reason, it's Davka in the era of the Rishonim, and not really before and not really after, that there was an effort to just sit down and say, okay, what are the 613 mitzvahs? So you don't find it in the sources specifically in Chazal in terms of counting the different obligations and prohibitions. And by the time you get to the Achronim, so there's a big literature, but the Achronim are commenting on the efforts of the Rishonim. So among the Rishonim, we have this whole endeavor of the Moneh HaMitzvos, of those who counted the mitzvos and tried to work within the system of 613 and explain how do we get 613. Now, there is some room to question how committed we are to the notion of 613. We're very committed to the mitzvos, but the question of there being 613 mitzvos specifically, that's a little bit of a question because the Ramban raises the issue. The Ramban has a lot to say about the whole topic because he wrote a running commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, so on the Shrashim, and also commenting on his particular choices in the counts of the Mitzvot. So the Ramban has a lot of back and forth with the Rambam on these issues. And in one place, the Ramban comments that there is a Gemara, for example, in Sota. There are Gemaras like this elsewhere also, but the Gemara in the beginning of Sota has a machlokas about three specific mitzvos, whether they are obligatory or whether they're rishus. So Tosfos there raises the question. So if you're going to say, let's say if you decide that these mitzvos are not actually obligations, so what do you do about the 613? How do you just lose those three mitzvos? So Tosfos has one suggestion, and the Ramban comments to that question. He says, okay, maybe there aren't 613 mitzvahs. I don't know. It's an opinion in the Gemara in the end of Makkah says 613. Maybe it's not the only opinion. So maybe you could have an Amora who's going to argue that a specific din is actually a chiyuv, and he doesn't have to work out the numbers because he doesn't have to agree that the numbers are actually there. So there is a whole discussion about how exactly you count and what you do with the count and whether we are committed to 613 being the number. And it's an interesting question, so lamai nafkamina. So I remember coming across a book in the library once, just saw the title. The title was something like The Concept of Tayag, or The Notion of Tayag, and Why Bother? Like, why do we care, I guess, about counting how many mitzvot there are and how exactly they are counted within the system? So that's an interesting discussion to have overall. But I think part of what we see, and part of what we'll see here specifically, is that it contributes to your understanding of a sugya, and it contributes to your understanding of what the mitzvah is about. So the idea that one mitzvah is distinct from another, or one mitzvah is not distinct from another, or that it's grouped with another, tells us something about what the message of the mitzvah is and what the focus of the mitzvah is. So having first a set of rules, like the Rambam spends a lot of time investing in what the rules are going to be, and then applying those rules, so all of that has a chelek in Talmud Torah, all of that helps us to understand a little bit what exactly we're saying. So here, the Rambam counts two. It's surprising because one of the principles the Rambam has is that if a mitzvah essentially is the same thing twice, so that happens. Sometimes the Torah will repeat something for emphasis, either a general sense of emphasis, or perhaps it means a little more than that, like Gemara sometimes suggests, but nonetheless, it's basically for reinforcement. So if a notion is mentioned in the Torah more than once, that doesn't mean that we count it more than once. It's just counted once. So here it's striking that the Rambam counts both of these. And speaking of striking, that's also a question, because what about Malkus? So do you get two sets of Malkus if one possesses Chametz? So do you get two sets of Malkus, for one for Bayira, one for Bayimatze? So here there's a couple of areas of ambiguity we kind of need to work through. So one is that it's not clear there's Malkus for this Isser at all. Right? The whole issue of Lav Hanitak Lase was one that we spoke about a lot in the context of Tashbisu. So it could be that there's an exception to the Malkus principle already, and that there's no Malkus to begin with. But we saw that the Rambam was not in that camp, and that's we had to figure out why is it not the Lav Hanitak Klase. But once we accept at least that he doesn't hold it to Lav Hanitak Klase, so then the way the Rambam writes it, there is a potential for Malkus. And that's how we know he doesn't hold it's Lav Hanitak Klase. But the potential for Malkus is very limited, because it's only going to apply to somebody who actually would purchase Chametz on Pesach or create Chametz on Pesach. It's not going to apply to somebody who just fails to get rid of it, because that would be a Lav She'en Bo Maisa. But theoretically, there's a scenario where somebody could be Chayev Malkus. So in that We've already narrowed it down twice, so it's only within views like the Rambam and only in a minority of situations. But if you accept those 2 points, and it's a Bisman HaMikdash and the Zonshin, so you have to go through a couple of hurdles for this to be a practical question. But in that scenario, when we have Dayanim Smuchim, who are giving Onshin, and we're following the Rambam specifically, and you actually purchased Chametz on Pesach, so your Chayiv Malchus, how many sets of Malchus? How many sets of Malchus? So it's not so clear. The Kesef Mishnah reads the Rambam when he says that if you acquire Chametz on Pesach, Lokim Mishum Ba'ira Ba'imatze, that you're actually Chayiv two sets of Malchus for the two Isurim. And that certainly makes the question deeper, right? That if you say that here the Rambam has posited that we only count it once if it's a repetitive Isser, and to say both it gets two slots in the Sefer HaMitzvos and two sets of Malchus is an even greater Chiddush. Now, it happens to be that not everyone agrees with the Kesef Mishnah's readings, and on this point, and there are other places in Mishneh Torah where it really sounds not that way. In this place, in Hilchos Chametz HaMatzah, which we've seen where he comments on it, there it's really not clear that he's saying two sets of Malchus. His language is Mishum Ba'ira Ba'imotze. Maybe if the Rambam had said Mishum Ba'ira U'Mishum Ba'imotze, one for this and one for that, maybe that would push us more to say he's actually talking about two sets of Malchus. I'm not sure that you necessarily see the basis there to assume that he's definitely saying two sets of Malchus. That seems to be subject to interpretation. Elsewhere in Mishneh Torah, it really sounds like he's got one set of Malchus. So how much of a question do we have here on the Rambam is somewhat of an issue. But at least the question, the fact that he counts it as two lavin, that's certainly surprising. It would be even more surprising if indeed he says you get two sets of Malchus. But that's what the Rambam does, and the Smag also does. And the other Rishonim don't necessarily agree. So, for example, he saw the Sefer HaChinuch. We had a chance to look in the Sefer HaChinuch. So there, it's all included in one. It's all one issue. In general, one nice discussion about this topic, which we'll probably refer to intermittently, overall questions of how you count mitzvos. So one of the achronim who gave a lot of attention to this and is quoted quite frequently by others was a very learned businessman by the name of Rav Yeruchim Fishel Perlow. If you're familiar with that sefer, with that name. So he's modest. His name is not prominently portrayed in his sefer. But if you've seen, it's a big three-volume set, the Sefer HaMitzvos L'Rasag. Reb Sadia, the sefer, is very widely available now. Reb Sadia Gaon, so he wrote a Sefer HaMitzvos, which is really not that long. It's essentially a poem where he lists all the mitzvos. But there was this very learned man, who was a businessman, Bruchim Fishel Perlow, who wrote a very, very, very extensive commentary on this Sefer HaMitzvos of Reb Sadia Gaon, so much so that the poem now it takes three very large volumes. And one of the things that he's generally going to talk about in most contexts is he pays a lot of attention to the question of why it is that the Rambam will count things one way and Reb Sadia Gaon will present them a different way, or why the Smag and the Smak, why they would have a formulation in a certain way as opposed to another way, why would they be counted and why would their listing be the way it is. So in general, if you're ever focused on such a question, so you can be pretty confident that Reb Yochanan Fishel Perlow will talk about it, And indeed, this is the case here. He doesn't disappoint. He has a nice discussion about this, and it's the Sefer. It's available in the Beis Medrash. It should be widely available if you want to take a look. He has a lot to say about this issue as well. So, in any event, so on our Gemara, starting in Hey Mid Beis, so the impression we have is that the two dinim are just informing each other, and it sounds like it's one, and that the Gemara is telling us through Gezeirah Shavas that the rules of one are the same as the other. So basically, that would probably reinforce our assumption that they are identical Isurim, and it's just two different ways of saying the same thing. But there is a little bit of room to question that as far as some of the Rishonim. So we mentioned already the Kesef Mishnah, that the Kesef Mishnah understands that in the situation of Tamun, so one would only violate Bal Yimatze, he wouldn't necessarily violate Bal Yira. So that would challenge the assumption that we might otherwise have, that the territory that's covered by each becomes identical through the process of Gezeirah Shavas. And there's also a comment about this in the Ritva. So I didn't add the Ritva to the list today because I think I gave it to you before. But if you want to look at it together, assuming I have it somewhere here. So the Ritva on Daf Hei and Hei Yimid Beis, commenting on Emar Sor Bateichem. So he quotes his Rabbi the Ra'ah, Perish HaRa'ah, B'Shem Rabbo, Dekeven Dekseva Gzeirah Shava. Since we have the Gzeirah Shava connecting by Iran by Yimatze, Harei Hu Ki'ilu Kosiv Chovayhu Bebatim Ubegvulin. So Gafilu Begvulin over B'Shnehem. It sounds like what the, even though one Pasuk talks about the house and one Pasuk talks about your borders, so beyond your house, so it seems like the rules are the same for both of them. Svekevet Shekain, Tu Lo Shari Tamun Begvulin. And since that's the case, so Tamun, which the Gemara had taught us, is prohibited in your house, and you shouldn't think that just because the language of Bayira sounds like don't see it, but maybe if it's hidden, it's okay. So the Gemara understands that no, that's not true. Lo Yimatze transfers back to there. So you can't, thank you, Ari, for hosting the Ritva. So let's open that up. Right, so you might think that it should only apply, it should only apply in the house. But no, so we see that the Gezeirah Shava tells us also that in Gvulin the din is that as well. And it does, you have a prohibition of Tamun there also. Kihechi delo sharina bebatim. Just like it's not allowed in the houses. But then he goes on to say, Vacherim pirish, delo ahani Gezeirah Shava, ela litain kula de Gvulin bebatim. So others disagree with this Ra'ah and say that the Gezeirah Shavah is only there to tell you that the Gvula, the Kula that applies in Gvulin applies to the houses as well. So therefore, Chametz, that it belongs to somebody else, of Hektish or of a non-Jew that you don't take Achrayas for, so that applies in both contexts. And the factor that if you have a issue of achrayis, if you've accepted responsibility for it, so that changes things, that makes you chayiv, that applies to both of them. So both of these dinim apply to both of them. Yes, that's the case. However, avaleka b'gvulin elalav de lo yirah b'luchud. But all we know about gvulin is lo yirah, not lo yimatze, and therefore what? So halachik nafgamina umina disharina tamun. And therefore, Taman, in that case, would be Mutter. So here you see the Ritva has a machlokis about this. According to the first opinion, according to the Ra'ah, for practical purposes, it sounds like they're the same. Bayura and Bayamatze have the same rules. And according to the Acherim, according to the others, not so pashut that it could be they're not really going to end up with the same parameters. And that's going to have a nafkamina. Din like Taman is only going to apply where Bayura is addressed to in the houses, and not necessarily Bigvulin. So a part of this question is, if we're assuming that the psukim are addressing different things, so one question is, what exactly do the words mean? And how much attention should we pay to the literal translation? So, for example, what does Bayirai mean? Literally, right? So if you're going to say that this Isser is independent of Bal Yimatzei, it's coming to tell us something in of itself. So how would you translate that pasuk? What is it telling you? How would you translate the words literally? You want to take a stab at it? Yeah, Ellie?
Maybe you shouldn't have the... There shouldn't exist chametz that you could see.
Okay, so it sounds like you're being influenced by Rishonim that was saying that. So that wouldn't necessarily be your instinctive translation. Indeed, there are Rishonim who do articulate it that way. So this seems to be a difference among various Rishonim. Then this is also something that Ruchim Fischel Perlo gives a lot of attention to, this question specifically. What does the word Uriah mean here? So Rashi, in a few places, sounds like it means you shouldn't see the chametz, which is probably how most people would instinctively translate it. So, for example, the Rashi we spoke about yesterday, the Rashi says that if you are away on a boat over the course of Pesach, so that will save you from Bayira during that time, because you're on the boat, you won't see the chametz. So it sounds like from Rashi there and in a few other places that he understands the Isser to mean literally you shouldn't see the chametz. So if you don't see it, so then you wouldn't necessarily be violating the message of what that pasuk is talking about. The Ran, if you had a chance to see, the Ran says that, no, it doesn't literally mean that, and that's the message of our Gemara, that what the Gemara is coming to tell us is that you shouldn't interpret the word literally, and that it's not specific when it says whatever the prohibitions that emerge from these psukim of not having a association with chametz, what the sum package of all the drushos of Chazal is, and what the combination of the psuk, or combination of the languages tell us, is that it's not literal, and that it's not about actively seeing chametz. It doesn't necessarily have to be seen by you in order to constitute a violation of Bayira. The Rush in Siman Tes, so the Rush discusses the question of the Gemara on Davav over there about how you have to be mevatel your chametz even after you looked for it, habodik sarach levatel. And there he discusses, so what's the point? Why do you need to do that? If all you have now is little crumbs left, so what is it that you need to address with the bitul chametz? You know, are we concerned that you're going to look at the chametz? Is that the issue? So there he explains that the focus of Bayiroa, linguistically and grammatically, it doesn't say Baal Tib, doesn't say Lo Sira, and it doesn't say that you should not look at chametz. It says Bayiroa, that chametz should not be seen. So the passive formulation seems to be a way of telling you that it's not so much about whether or not you see the chametz. It's about the potential to see the chametz. So therefore, it essentially becomes a din in the chametz, that the chametz is defined as problematic when it's chametz that you could be seeing. But it's not about whether or not you actually see the chametz. So that also contributes a little bit to the whole question of how to interpret the pasuk, and that's a part of the larger question of how the two psukim relate to each other. So, just mention briefly, and we'll expand maybe on this a little bit tomorrow, that Rav Soloveitchik, as is quoted in the Sefer Harei Kedem, that Rav Soloveitchik discusses this question of the Rambam's doubling of the language, and he has a very fascinating approach there, because normally the Rambam's position would be that you don't count it twice if it's just a doubling, so why does he count it twice? And in terms of Malkus, he proves from other statements in the Rambam that it seems likely that the Rambam only holds one set of Malkus, different than the Kesef Mishnah. So what's going on here? Why does the Rambam count it twice when his rules say you only count it once? And once he's counting it twice, then how come it's only one set of Malkus? So he has a very interesting formulation there, where he says it's counted twice. That really we could understand maybe even better than we thought, because Maisa, they are talking about two different aspects. Each one has chidushim that the other one doesn't have. So if you have dinim that are being conveyed through two different sources, even if they share a general territory, so then it makes sense to count it twice because they're not identical. It's not just the same thing repeated. Each one has its own aspects to it. But what about the fact that he's still only having one set of Malkus for the two? So there, here's where it really gets interesting. So he says essentially a part of the impact of each pasuk is that, and of each din, is that it's telling you that this chametz is significant, and therefore its partner is also relevant here. So the chiddush of Baal Yirah is that here's what Baal Yirah teaches you, these types of situations, and therefore once you know that, Baal Yimatzeh is also relevant. And Baal Yimatzeh comes to include whatever it includes, and once it does that, so you know Baal Yirah is also relevant. So it's a very complex, maybe unique relationship, that you have each din telling you something special, but once it teaches us that, a part of what it teaches us is that the other din is also going to be relevant in these circumstances. So, practically speaking, it's impossible to violate one without the other. Again, it's against the Kesef Mishnah, and it's against also the Acherim and the Ritva. He's assuming that as a matter of practice, they're always going to be simultaneous. And therefore, you're always going to violate one the same time as you violate the other. And therefore, it's also a very fascinating formulation, says, so what it does is, it makes the other one into a lav she'en bo maisa. Because since it's automatically triggered by an action that's already covered by the first lav, so the lav doesn't involve any extra action. So that's the type of lav she'en bo maisa. So if you were to purchase chametz on Pesach, you'd be chayiv malchus, says the Rambam, but only one set, because even though you're violating both Baal Yirah and Baal Yimatzeh, but the second one, whichever one you want to say, the second one, is a lav she'en bo maisa, because there's no additional action that took place in order for you to trigger that lav. Very fascinating formulation. So we have still some more details just to add, but God willing, we should wrap up the Inyanim of Baal Yirah Baal Yimatzeh tomorrow. So just to quickly recap what we spoke about, so we mentioned the differentiation. We talked a little bit about the whole notion of, say, for a mitzvos genre and how mitzvos are counted and some of what's written about this. And we talked about the fact that the Rambam surprisingly counts two, even though in his Shrashim he says you only count one for a repeated lav. And it would be even more surprising if the Kesef Mishnah is correct, and he says you even get two sets of Malkus, even though we see that that's somewhat debatable. And the Pashtus of the Gemara in Hay and Mibbeis, where it really highlights the Limudim from one to the other, is that it's really just telling us that they together formulate one message, and it should be one din for both. And that's what it sounds like from the Ritva also, when he quotes the Ra'ah, but he also quotes the Acherim that disagrees. Tomorrow, maybe I'll send you around the Rabbeinu David. You can see he expands on this point, his own spin on it. So that Acherim in the Ritva does distinguish practically between them, as does the Kesef Mishnah, where he assumes that if you have Taman Chametz, you would only be Chayiv for Bayim Matzeh, and not Bayira. The Acherim in the Ritva had added the halacha that Taman wouldn't be an Isser at all outside the house, because it doesn't necessarily transfer. We don't assume that the Gezer Shava covers everything. And we said this also affects the question just of translation. What does Bayirah mean? So Rashi in a few places sounds like it means literally you should not see the Chametz, and if you are prevented from seeing the Chametz, you are covered as far as Bayirah. While other Rishonim have it differently. So other Rishonim, the Ran says explicitly that it's not davka. It doesn't mean literally that you shouldn't see. It's just referring to a certain type of association. And the Rush says that it's davka formulated in the passive to say not that it's about seeing the chametz, but it's about chametz that could be seen, that already creates a problem whether or not you actually do see it. And then we discussed with Soloveitchik's Hesber here that the surprising fact that there's two counts in the Rambam, maybe it's not so surprising because there are indeed unique halachas to each, and therefore it makes sense to count the two. Just because they cover the same ground, the same topic, doesn't mean they're not talking different ways about the same topic. So they should both be counted. But then why is it one set of Malkus? So here's where he says the bigger Chiddush, that a part of the impact of each din is that it tells you the other one also applies in these circumstances. So whatever Bayira, for example, comes to include, once it does that, it's telling you that Bayira and Bayimatzeh are relevant. And therefore, as a matter of practicality for Malkus purposes, yes, there's two Isurim happening, but the second one becomes a lot of shame b'maisa because it doesn't involve any extra activity on your part that wasn't already covered by the first one, and therefore for that reason only one set of malchus. Again, a very interesting approach, and we'll add a little bit more and try to clean up whatever crumbs are left of Bayimatzeh, God willing, tomorrow. So I wish you a safe and healthy day, and I look forward to seeing you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. All right.
Is that me?
Yes, sir.
If you say that Balyura means that you shouldn't have the ability to see Chametz,
like the Rush.
Yeah. So how far does that extend? Would it extend to the point that we would say that if you cover something on Pesach, then you will still be chayiv? If you cover Chametz on Pesach, you'll still be chayiv because technically you have the ability to go and uncover it.
Oh, but so there, that we get into that interesting Chiddush Tosfos we still have to get to, that maybe for other reasons that creates a p'tur from Bayira Bayimatzeh. The fact that you're covering it for the purpose of ultimately destroying it. Covering it by itself wouldn't do it, but covering it specifically because your intent is to destroy it, that's where Tosfos has his interesting position that's also, that God willing, something we have to fill in a little bit more.
Also, just one last point. If we say, I don't remember who said it, but that last point that we spoke about there being Lav Shein B'Maisa for the other Lav, and that's how you only get one set of Malkus.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a Nafkamina as to which Lav you're being over, because seemingly it's very arbitrary to say one over the other. So how do we figure that out, and is there an afkamina?
Right, presumably there isn't an afkamina, and presumably it doesn't matter. It's an interesting question as far as Hasra, should that create a problem? Presumably not, although that's the role of Hasra in general. Especially according to the Rambam. The Rambam says Hasra doesn't actually require you to identify the lav anyway. So the Rambam Shitaso, it wouldn't create an issue. If you brought in the view of other Rishonim, it would be interesting. But probably wouldn't be an issue either way.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Everyone should have an amazing day. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so from what I something I saw that when it comes to talking about the Rav and his position on it, he brings up Tamura.
Yeah, you mentioned Rav Schechter's notes. Yeah, we have to take a look at that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so Belina will try to take a look at that for tomorrow also. Okay. Yes, sir.
I noticed that I think the Chino says it's, he puts in one mitzvah, he says it's 2 weeks like certain.
So, right, so how do you relate to that?
I don't see, is that something that's common? Like, I don't know.
So that's also maybe something we should explore a little bit more. And how that relates to his counting system is also something interesting to consider. Okay, to be continued. Have a great day.